Let's welcome to the stage Bob Sima, Shannon Plummer.
Whoo! My goodness. You guys have no idea how good you look, how good you feel, and how good it feels to be out on the road again. My goodness. I remember coming here when all of this newness that is now manifest was a dream. How beautiful it is to see the expansion, not just of the building, but that means that hearts are expanding. And what a beautiful celebratory time it is for all of us to gather and to share the abundance that we experience so much of in so many ways, right? I love it. So, a few weeks ago, Richard reached out to us and said, "What's your talk title going to be?" Bob's like, "Hey, honey, what's your talk title going to be?" "I don't know. What do you want me to say? I don't know." I said, "Tell him the mystery of life." He goes, "Well, that's broad." Yes, it is indeed. And somehow, some way, what happens is three of Bob's songs kind of trickle into my consciousness after I mentioned the talk title. And lo and behold, they somehow all fit together, and I pull them together. I usually don't know how it's going to happen. This time, we were getting ready to leave for this five-week tour on the road, and I opened our little book nook, we call it. You know, under the stairs, sometimes you have that closet. We have shelves and all our games and our books in there. And these two books said, "Hey, take me." This book I got in college over 25 years ago. Haven't opened it in 20 years. But it's traveled with me to like 18 places that I've lived. And this book I got, wow, probably in 2012, the summer after we met, when we were out in California. I can tell you, this is like a PhD thesis, and I've read bits and pieces of it, and I've never read it from cover to cover. I was like, all right, I trust it. What's going to happen here? So yesterday, on our 14-hour drive from our new home in Florida, this is what happened. So I want to invite you today into an esoteric experience. The mystery of life. Scientific studies have documented that brain activation is associated with different types of input. Okay? So the spoken word activates a certain portion of the brain. So I'm activating your brain right now with my words. And that activation depends on the quality of the voice, the temperament, and the comprehension of the language being shared. Instrumental music has the ability to activate different areas of the brain than the spoken word. The degree of activation is influenced by quality, harmonics, interpretation of that instrumental music, and the level of musical training or appreciation of the listener. So music, you see where I'm going here? Music plus lyrics, music plus spoken word, sung word, has the potential to activate all areas of the brain that are affected by both spoken word and instrumental music. So from all of that, we can deduce that the most optimal exercise for the synapses in our brain would be music that makes us feel good and that is perceived by the listener to have positive lyrical message and harmonious resolve. Fair? Fair enough. That's where we're starting. So again, I want to invite you into an esoteric experience. What is esoteric? I'm going to give you the good old Webster definition of esoteric. Restricted to or intended for an enlightened or initiated minority, especially because of abstruseness or obscurity. That's pretty serious stuff. Another definition, difficult to understand, abstruse. Not openly admitted or private. Okay? So I started. I want to invite you into an esoteric experience, an initiation, a private experience. Okay? One that you might have a hard time understanding. This is not going to require intellect, but an opening of the mind. It's not going to require comparison to somebody else's esoteric experience, but surrendering into your own. It's not going to require the use of the brain, but permission for your brain to use you as a vessel. It's not an exercise for the majority, but an initiation for your own creative spirit. So, are we ready?
Yeah.
All right. All right. So, with this experience, I invite you to sink in. I want you to listen to the lyrics of Bob's song. You can choose to close your eyes. You can choose to focus on a single point of focus in the room, whatever feels most comfortable for you. However you can experience these lyrics to create this experience, that is your open invitation to your heart, your mind, your soul, and your body to allow those four levels of being to navigate you through this beautiful song.
No one is looking, I swallowed deserts and clouds, and I chew on mountains because I know they are sweet bones. No one is looking, I sip from the cool summer sky and I savor the blue and the colors of my eyes. When no one is looking, I want to kiss God. When no one is looking, I want to kiss God. So I lift up my own head to my mouth, but no one is looking. I call forth the thunder and the rain, and I lasso the sunshine, and it warms the blood in my veins. But no one is looking. I talk with the flowers. From the Milky Way, and I polish off the stars,
and the dust on my fingers is my own.
But no one is looking. I paint smiles on faces with frowns, and I swipe a little lift from a joyful child. she's holding my hand. No one is looking. I breathe in with you and I feel sweet relief. And I hold the mystery closer than I hold my beliefs. Yeah, I hold the mystery closer than I hold my beliefs. When no one is looking, I want to kiss God. No one is looking. I wanna kiss God. So I lift up my own hand to my mouth. Yeah, I lift up my own hand to my mouth. And I lay one down.
What imagery. So, it's interesting because everybody had an esoteric experience, right? Unique, one of a kind, all your own, private. Initiated. So, were you inspired to connect to some personal experiences of your life that related to the lyrics of the song? Maybe. Were you able to create new imagery using those lyrics as the foundation that created those thought patterns? Maybe you found yourself in some extraordinary visual adventure as the lyrics became the words of the story and you were that main character of that story, and the music helped you turn the page. I hold the mystery closer than I hold my beliefs. I hold the mystery closer than I hold my beliefs. That's esoteric in and of itself. The mystery within the experience that you just had is way more important than any belief that might have limited you in that experience, from having that experience. That song was, as Bob often says, created out of thin air. I'm sure Richard can appreciate that. Created out of thin air. It was composed into an arrangement that can be reproduced at will, usually.
Sometimes.
And repeatedly manifests through a guitar and vocal cords. Yet, a listener can experience it within themselves. And that experience appears to birth full circle out of thin air. So, in this book, The Transcendent Unity of Religions, there's an excerpt that says, "We recall a passage in the Quran in which Abraham asks God to show him how he raises the dead. God answers with the question, 'Dost thou not yet believe?' Abraham answers, 'Indeed, I believe. But I ask this that my heart may be appeased.'" It is in this sense that it is, in our view, always permissible to recall truths which in themselves are quite evident. especially since the most widely known truths are often the most misunderstood. I hold the mystery closer than I hold my beliefs. Could it be that our beliefs might sometimes prevent us from recognizing and embracing the magic of a mystery that is happening to, through, in, around, and at us? Is that potential mystery what we have come to define as religion or spirituality? Our own personalized understanding of religion and spirituality. Could our beliefs possibly downgrade the mystery to a misstory? You see what I did there? Mystery to misstory. I hold the mystery closer than I hold my beliefs. I hold the mystery closer than I hold the misstory. So, again, returning to the transcendent unity of religions, Schuon has a passage on the esoteric distinction as deriving from spiritual types. Intimations and realizations of the supreme identity appear in varying degrees of explicitness in all revealed religions and constitute the point at which they are one. But this establishes religious unity on the esoteric plane. It is hidden and secret, not because those who know will not tell, but because the truth to which they are privy is buried so deep in the human composite that they cannot communicate it. Not in any way the majority will find convincing. As the intellect undercuts the world of distinctions from the standpoint of discriminating perception that divides into subject and object, it appears non-existent. Unity appears non-existent. So the issue of unity and diversity in religion is converted into one of the spiritual types, esoteric and exoteric. The esoteric minority consists of men and women who realize that they have their roots in the absolute. Either they experience the identification directly, or, failing this, they stand within earshot of its claim. Something within them senses that the claim is true, even if they cannot validate it completely. The exoteric majority is composed of the remainder of mankind for whom this way of talking about religion is sterile, if not unintelligible. Yeah. Doctoral thesis, I'm telling you. That's some serious stuff right there. So, the definition of exoteric, not confined to an inner circle of disciples or initiates, comprehensible to or suited to the public, popular, of or relating to the outside, external. So, we had our esoteric experience, and we want to shift to the external influencers and influences that threaten our ability to trust the mystery rather than the misstory. So, I want to invite you into a meditation. For this one, if you are comfortable, I would like you to feel comfortable in your chair, whatever that looks like to you. It doesn't have to be right and perfect for somebody else, it just has to be right and perfect for you. I do invite you to lower your eyelids, soften your gaze. If you're comfortable, fully close your eyes. Connect to the breath. Play with your breath. Give it a little attention and direct it to different parts of your body. And as you send that life-affirming, life-activating breath to different parts of your body, allow it, give it permission, and ask it to activate those parts of your body, all of the cells in that part of your body. Ask your cells to wake up, to come alive. Allow your breath to lead you to your inner knowing. Maybe that inner knowing has been hidden or buried in the human composite, as Shun says. Find that knowing that is calling to you. Ask your breath to show you the mystery within. Ask your breath to dissolve the myth story.
down into this moment. The only one there ever is. You could taste eternity, know the definition of unity, of every single solitary being that's ever been breathing, every daydream they ever been dreamed in, every belief they ever believed, come eye to eye with every truth, and know that every bird was singing just for you. In the blink of an eye, your whole life reviews, and every hand you ever held was right there with you. In every room that's ever fallen still, and in every room that ever will, the spirit arrives and it shows its face. It comes alive and you can taste its grace, but they hide it, hide it, hide it on the inside. But you'll find it, find it, find it when you don't try. What you were looking for is what is looking.
Gratitude for those hidden gems, those forgotten jewels, those uncovered treasures that you hold on the inside. And I invite you to welcome those exoteric concepts and misunderstandings that challenge the mystery that is you. Allow them to come face to face with the esoteric being that you reconnected today. Allow them to see and share in each other's truths. Allow them to feel each other's purpose. Allow them to become friends. Esoteric meets exoteric, and together they form unity. And always, I recommend a bow of reverence and whispering or saying in your mind, thank you, thank you, thank you. I invite you to reconnect to your breath. Feel that sense of kinship with the all that is, the all that is you, the all that is the mystery of you. And follow your breath as it leads you back into your physical surroundings. It leads you back into the chair, leads you back into the room. And as you are comfortable, opening your eyes. They hide it on the inside. You'll find it when you don't try. The mystery, the missed story. So, 20 years of sitting on the shelf, I opened up to the introduction and I said, wow, well, isn't that the perfect compliment to what we just experienced? So, in Diane Morgan's words from The Best Guide to Eastern Philosophy and Religion, subtitled, Whether You're a Believer, a Seeker, or Just Inquisitive, This Guide is for You. I got this because I took a world religion class in college. That's why I actually got this book. So the intro, it definitely explains the esoteric and exoteric and the constant challenge we have with those two things in this global culture that we experience. And they mirror every truth and question that we feel within us and that we ask most often internally. And if we're really lucky, we have the gift of somebody that we can ask the questions to and have a beautiful dialogue and discussion about those esoteric concepts that butt up against these exoteric mis-stories. Most Western traditions, such as Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, see the absolute as transcendent, beyond, and other. Most Eastern traditions, on the other hand, envision it as imminent within and ultimately identical with the seeker. Western religion conceives the ultimate as God, and the goal of most people practicing the Western tradition is to know God, obey God, and form a loving and vital relationship with God. God is a person. Eastern thought tends to be non-theistic. It sees the ultimate as something transpersonal, and the goals of its practitioners are awareness and unity. So in Western thought, the divine is a person. In Eastern thought, every person is ultimately divine. In the West, time is often compared to a swift-running river. It flows in one direction, towards eternity. This viewpoint makes us look at eternity in a one-sided way. Eternity lies in the future. It's something that awaits us. Although many Westerners spend a considerable amount of time contemplating a life after death, life before birth is often left out of the equation. In the East, however, time is more aptly compared to a great primeval ocean, always existing, totally surrounding us. It's our source and our destination. Eternity doesn't await us, for we are present in it right now. Western religions depend upon historical events to give significance to their most precious beliefs. God acts through history to teach lessons, redeem, or punish. This concept is entirely absent from Eastern philosophy. Although it would be wrong to say that history is meaningless, it would be better to say that history is a reflection of human rather than divine action. It results from our act, not God's plan. In the East, lines blur between religion and philosophy. The sacred is not distinct from the profane. All branches of knowledge are seen as aspects of one truth. To Westerners who tend to think in terms of categorization, definitions, and labels, this is a strange, even annoying, state of affairs. Only when the West stops insisting the East use a Western perspective can Westerners hope to understand Eastern religions. And I know here in Unity, we honor all paths, right? We begin to make that integrated. In every religious tradition, there is a difference between popular belief and scholarly formulation. Popular customs differ from place to place, and scholarly attitudes are far from monolithic. And both change over time, sometimes radically. Religion that has been exported to a different culture assimilates some of the attitudes and folkways of that culture. Most troubling, however, is the inevitable gulf, often vast, between the ideals of any religious tradition and the way it is actually practiced. Too often, when comparing religions, we are inclined to value our own religion by its ideals while denigrating other religions based on the habits of their practitioners. This is tremendously unfair, of course. The truth is that few individuals of any faith live up to the noble concepts espoused by their religious heritage. This is in the nature of things. The great world religions have this one thing in common. They give us something to strive for. Religions are not for perfect people. Perfect people don't need a religion. They need worshipers. Most of us aren't perfect, however, and we aren't living the ideal life. Why is this? The missed story of life. The mystery of life.
You're going to end it there?
I am going to end it there. No, you're going to end it.
Well, the thing is, I knew she was going to end it there, but I just wanted to say that because she was reading some of this to me in the car, and I was trying to stay awake. That is a thick book. I'm not her talk, but, you know, the book. And so words are important, right? They are the building blocks of thoughts. A word is the construct of a thought. Everything that I do is about words, everything. But I just put it into this. And as I'm listening to this beautiful use of the language just spoken to me, it brings me to the same feeling that I get all the time, which was Wayne Dyer saying, sell your cleverness, purchase bewilderment. So if y'all wonder why I look so bewildered all the time, because I'm following Wayne Dyer. And so this is a biographical song that has way too many words in it. I'll just leave it at that. I won't lie, I love to cry. I got a raging river inside, but my mind doesn't know when to let my heart go, and my soul won't let me hide. I'm a dreamer, I'm kind of lazy, but I call my crazy crazy. I'm a wreck, I'm a wreck, I'm a holy, holy mess. But I'm sacredly awake. And I'm not here because it's home. I'm not lost and I know I'm not alone. Cause I see it in your eyes and I see it in the stars. And I see it everywhere. That the same thing that paints me well there.
hurt from our hurt, and we fear from our words, and we love from the love that we won't drink of.
It's an endless, bottomless thirst,
and I have found that it matters
that the past has passed.
And if you dare to let it go and you stare down the ghost,
well, the ghost stops staring back.
And the same thing that pains me, well, it pains you. What if we are everything and we're nothing? Are we insignificant something? Are we hardly innocent, good and magnificent pieces of one thing? And we rise and we fall, and we run and we walk and we crawl. Well, we might not have it all together, but together we have it all.
Missing out on this truth
that there are sages
and there are queens.
Every scene in there is the unseen. When you gaze in the mirror, will it ever get clearer?
Can you wake up from this dream
that there are lies before your eyes? We're all wrapped up in a disguise. Well, the truth needs the proof, and it goes by many names and many languages and many faiths. Stop seeking,
we're seeking you.
And be still and you know that it's true. If you don't believe it, there's a man by the river with a bucket of water to sell to you. And the same thing that pains me, well, it pains you. What if we are everything and we're nothing? Are we insignificant somethings? Are we hardly innocent, purely magnificent pieces of one thing? And we rise and we fall, and we run and we walk and we crawl. Well, we might not have it all together, but together we have it all.
Thank you.